Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Scott Gregory, sitting in today for Rich Fisher. On this edition of our show, we are presenting a conversation that was recorded last month at the StoryCorps mobile booth here in our community. As many public radio fans can attest, the StoryCorps Oral History Project dates back to 2003 and is a regular Friday morning fixture on NPR's Morning Edition. The StoryCorps booth was here in our community, recording scores of interviews in March and April, and we are delighted to share one of those interviews with you today. Michael Lohman, a Choctaw Elvis impersonator who started personifying the king in his 20s and is now in his early 50s, is something of a local celebrity by now and is even the star of a new TV program, Indian Elvis on the Res, which had a screening at the Circle earlier this month. Lohman is here in conversation with the producer of that TV program, Norris Streetman, and they talk about how and when Lohman started impersonating Elvis, and they talk at length about the first episode of that TV program, Indian Elvis on the Res. It's a show that, by the way, highlights the work of indigenous artists and entertainers, and an episode two is now in the works. And they also talk about Lohman's experiences growing up in our community as an indigenous person and his work as a KJ, or karaoke jockey, which happens most weekends here in Tulsa at a bar called Lot 6. All of this and much more as we get to know Michael Lohman, the Elvis impersonator known as Indian Elvis, and his producer Norris Streetman here in conversation at the StoryCorps mobile booth. Thanks for tuning in.
Norris Streetman here, Tulsa, Oklahoma, and my interview partner is Michael Lohman, Indian Elvis. Michael, you weren't always Indian Elvis.
No. It's a funny story. I remember being age 7 and my mother having the Tulsa World, the Tulsa Tribune paper held up and had this big picture of Elvis on there, like took almost half the page. And it says, Elvis dies at 42. And she's like, do you know who Elvis is? And I said, that's the guy that goes like, hunka, hunka, little baby. And so I was 7 when he passed away. So I remembered who he was. And of course, you know, I'd heard his songs. And then I was singing karaoke one night. And I was probably like 22, 25, something like that. So for a long time, I would just do this one song, Are You Lonesome Tonight, at the karaoke. And I went to Vegas. I was doing some shows up there for my Native American dancing. And
now you got into Native American dancing. So what tribal affiliation are you?
I'm Choctaw.
And so you got into this dancing. Did you get into the dancing when you were 8 or 7? Or when did that kind of all combined at once?
Well, I was singing with a group of guys. What happened was I started dating this girl. And when we were introduced to each other, she was taken away because I used to have long hair. And she's like, oh, do you sing? I'm like, no. Do you dance? No. She goes, do you play flute? I'm like, well, I do got one hanging up on the wall. And she goes, well, learn it. You're going to be in our dance troupe. She had a dance troupe called Desenal, which stands for Daughters and Sons of Native American Warriors.
Wow.
So they'd have this dance troupe with their singers and dancers and go around and perform and educate on our Native American culture and our dance. So I would sit there and do the flute.
So it was all the traditional dancing in your Choctaw and different other nations that you got to performing. And then from that, you eased into Indian Elvis?
Well, like I said, I was in Vegas doing a show. So we went to this thing called Elvis-A-Rama on Industrial Street in Vegas. And when you walk in, there's like a couple cars, a couple jumpsuits, one of his motorcycles, like a little small museum. And then you go in and watch a show. And at that time, I had my hair short. And the girl I was with, I guess they thought she was Marilyn Monroe and I was Elvis. So they set us at this love seat that was in the shape of a heart with the velvet red. And all these Asian people started coming up and taking pictures of us. And I was like, why are they taking pictures of us? And they thought I was Elvis and she was Marilyn Monroe.
Wow. Just right off the bat.
Yeah.
I mean, Vegas of all places.
Yeah. And then, so we watched the Elvis performer. And then afterwards, they had a little booth that you made a CD of yourself singing.
Oh, yeah.
So it was like the Sun Recording Studios, they called it.
Uh-huh.
So, of course, I did Are You Lonesome Tonight? And
Are You Lonesome?
The manager came out and because they played over the speaker.
Right.
So the manager came out and he goes, I just wanted to see who was singing that. And he goes, you sound just like him. He said, you kind of look like him. You sound like him. Have you ever thought about doing this before? And I was like, nope. So, and then, you know, because I was terrified. I'm like, I'm not ever going to get, in, you know, even though I'd perform, I'm just like, that was a different kind of performance.
Yeah. So here you are stepping out into the Elvis arena, which opens up this massive different type of audience, right? From not only tribal, but now you're in kind of the other world too.
Yes, sir. You know, it doesn't matter. I'm a little darker than Elvis, being native, but, you know, as far as the suit and the hair, like I grow my own sideburns out, got my own hair. I try to take care of myself, and I do the actual 73 Elvis outfit with the conchos, and that was the early stages when he was still pretty fit and before he got to 77 where he ballooned up. But so I tried. But so if I ever get a little heavier, that's okay because I can just go up in years and get a different outfit.
But, you know, someone said Elvis possibly might be Choctaw or Cherokee.
Well, they said he was Cherokee, but he's from
Mississippi,
and we have Choctaw Nation down there.
That's really interesting.
Mississippi Choctaws.
Because he does have high cheekbones. I mean, there's some, you know, in his mom, you could tell there's kind of this native feature about her. So, I mean, wow.
Well, I think anytime anybody becomes famous, they find out they're a little bit of native. I think every tribe wants to claim them. But I think it's Choctaw, baby.
So here you were. You got this gig. Now, when was your first gig on actually being Indian Elvis?
Well, so I went back to the Elvis-O-Rama about 2 weeks later, and I said, yeah, I would like to kind of get into this Elvis thing. And so he goes, well, we got to get you a suit. And I could not afford those suits. At the time, you know, it was hard to get at that time. I mean, they were like in the thousands.
And I mean, so, they have sequences on them. They've got buttons and the kind of different types of
jewelry and gems and gold. And
now, are they kind of jumpsuits or are they one type of suit? Or are they just you piecemeal them like a pants and a... jacket and a shirt?
Well, when I first did it, I just went ahead and went to the thrift store and bought, a suit. And it was kind of like a gray suit, and then I wore, like, white shirts, and I got bought some black and white patent leather shoes, and I started doing the 50s. Because at the time, you know, I was a little younger, so I could get away with doing the 50s.
Yeah, I know, but now when did your mom say, son, we got to do something different. Let me help you with your suit. When did she come about and say, or did you say, hey, mom, I know you're a seamstress. I know grandma was a seamstress, and I bet you could help me on this. I mean, how'd that happen?
Well, I mean, later on, after I got the regular suit from the thrift store, I went and bought a jumpsuit, an Elvis white jumpsuit from a guy who retired as an Elvis impersonator. It was just a little big, but, you know, I was able to fit into it still. And so she altered it a little bit because she's the one that made my Native American regalia, my outfits and everything. So she had some sewing ability, and like I said, she altered my first suit. Then I bought another one from a costume store, and it was all leather. And it was skin tight, and it was so hot. And I was like, oh, I gotta go buy me one. But like I said, they were in the thousands of dollars. And she said, I think I might be able to make you one if we can find a pattern. So I went to, and it was so hard to find a pattern because they didn't want that getting out because everybody and their mom would make them.
Just like my
mom makes mine.
Yeah.
So, and that's how she's made my jumpsuit, the white concha one, and she's working on another one that instead of doing beadwork on the side because, you know, I have to get it clean, you know, from the perspiration and then moving around. So we got this pattern that looks like beadwork and from Sharp's Indian store in Ponca City.
Yeah.
And so we're
because
just sewing.
Beads are really kind of part of the Native American culture and the art is beads, right? And so that's kind of why you wanted to incorporate it into the suit itself?
Well, Well, like I said, it's going to be like a suit like he would wear.
Right.
But in a Native aspect.
Yes.
So it's, you know, be a Native or Indian Elvis, you know, with Indian beadwork. That would just be... And that's the thing, too, you know, even though I've been Indian Elvis for a long time, they've gone through the change of Native American and Indigenous.
Oh, my God.
But all names can be used loosely, you know.
Because I know my grandma's Choctaw, and she called, we all Indians around here. And so she was always telling everybody, you know.
Well, that's what I was saying. It's like, it's all terms can be used loosely. I still call myself Indian Elvis, you know.
Right,
I've always,
right.
See other Indians, even though they're Indigenous or Native, you know, or Native Americans. But
so what do you think about Indian Elvis on the res? I mean, here you're the star, you know, you're the talk show, and you've been able to perform, you know, a number of your songs, you know, our first show. And then we had, you know, the guest and the conversation, the cameras. What was your take, you know, the first day that we started shooting? And I know you weren't feeling too good that day, but you were a consummate pro. That's what I'm just really impressed with you. You showed up early, and you weren't feeling too good, but you couldn't tell at all, and you had that high energy, and I'm just going, wow, this guy's really got it together. So, I mean, what was your take on the show?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, because that day... I don't know what happened. I just was really sick. I had a headache and just was nauseous. It was so weird because, like, I've been, like I said, to shows in North Dakota, Vegas, Corpus Christi, just all over. And it's so funny because I'll have one person, they'll sign me one person to escort me around or, like, wait on me. Like, do you need a water? Can you, you know, do you need, you know?
Yeah.
And I always kind of laugh at that. And I'm like, I'm just Michael Lohman. The character is Indian Elvis, but just treat me like a regular person, and you know I can get my own water, you know. And so there, of course, they gave me an assistant or whatever you call it. And
right.
She's like, "What can I get for you? Can I get you anything? Are you cold? Are you hot? Do I need to turn down temperature?
Yeah.
Need a water?" I was like, "No, honey, I am so fine. You know, you don't need. I can get my own water. That's okay. Okay, you need a cookie? You know." You know, yeah, that day, and I just said, I just want to sit here and meditate before I go on.
And so you have to get in this place, this frame of mind.
I just had to meditate that day because I was so not feeling good at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just trying to collect my energy and just trying to, you know, trying to stay focused.
But did you reach out to some of your elders of the past and say, give me some strength to get on stage and to perform? I mean, was there any ritual you went through before the show or anything?
No. Because
we were all running around.
I was too busy being sick to even think of all that stuff. You always think of that stuff later, like I should have prayed or I should have did this or should that. You think about that later. That time I just wanted to, you know, go back to bed. But I was just like, just muscle through this and just smile and just try to be active and energetic. You know, I love, you know, I'm a lover of life, but I love to perform for people.
Yes.
And even though I'm interviewing these people, I still like to perform for them and interview them and make sure that they're comfortable. That's part of performance, making sure people are comfortable, make sure they're happy, make sure they're smiling, you know. And so when they came on, I know one of them or two of them may have not ever been on camera before, and they were nervous.
Well, that was Russell.
And they talked to me backstage, and I said, you know, you're going to be fine. This is my first time, too, and so we're going to do it together. And so everything's going to be all right, and you're going to do wonderful. And just make sure you smile a little bit more. And
so after you did your monologue, and then I guess it was, who was the first person that came up? Jordan? Was it Jordan?
The comedian,
And then she was the comedian. Then she came and sat with you. Man, I mean, she just kind of went, you know, and conversation just went 90 miles an hour. I mean, it's kind of hard for you to even get a couple of questions in. But, I mean, you threw a bunch of questions at her. But was there anything that really kind of either made you scratch your head or say, wow, that was pretty cool about Jordan?
Well, I thought she was a very hilarious person. And the thing is, after watching the take, I could see where, like, usually I would have came in with something funnier or, you know, or even though you guys say, oh, you did a great job and you were lively, I was, like, dead inside. I was dying inside. I was like, get me home. But yeah, I was able to ask her some questions and have some bit of a wit in there. And, but yeah, she was funny. I enjoyed, like.
But then you also talked to her about her kids, raising her kids. She's a single mom. She got two kids. And you guys talked about, you know, how you were raised as a child. And you really didn't know who you were. If you could share that, that gave me goosebumps about how kids would come up to you. And you didn't realize you were so different until.
Well, you know, my real dad was an abusive father and drank a little bit. So, and he was chief of police in this town. He had like four counties. And so my mother, there was hardly any men that could help her. So she just picked up, moved to Tulsa to get away from him and to raise me. She was a single mother. And that's why I always tried to take care of, you know, the single moms and women. And
yes.
That are struggling. And so, you know, I feel for them. You know, we never had time to relate or talk about my culture. Mm-hmm. And going into school, of course, I flunked first grade and I just didn't have any scholastic skills at all.
And it wasn't because you were dumb or anything. You did have some learning disabilities like I did. You know, it took me a while to catch on to reading. And, I mean, did you have those kind of issues, or what was going on there?
Well, I mean, I was, of course, slow at learning, dyslexic as well. You know, they say 10 out of 2 people are dyslexic, so. But, you know, just growing up, going to school, I went to all these schools where I was the only Native kid there. And, you know, the kids were kind of cruel. They were like.
Kids are mean. Yeah. Little kids are mean.
They were coming up to me.
Oh, my God, they're mean.
They're like, your mom needs to wash you. You're dirty. And I would go home and try to scrub and get one of those little green scrubbing brushes that you used to scrub the counters with.
Yeah.
Because it was a harsh abrasive.
Yeah.
And I was trying to scrub all that off me. And yeah, that's good. You know, and I talk about that and people kind of get sad. They're like, wow, that's.
But your mom said, hey, you're not dirty.
I'm like, what tribe am I? And she's like, you're Choctaw. And I was like, okay. And so growing up, it wasn't until, you know, my early teens, you know, it's sad, but, you know, I was made fun of a lot because I was, I had these buck teeth and these bug eyes and I was skinny. And so I started growing my hair out to cover my face.
Mm-hmm. Getting back to the show, you know, and as, you know, Jordan was talking about her kids, I mean, you could relate, but yet she was really trying to get her kids involved in the traditions, which for you, I mean, your family was just trying to survive, right? I mean, there's kind of a parallel, but not really, because, you know, she probably had a little bit more support than your family. I mean, when you heard her talk, I mean, what was your thoughts?
Well, I mean, what brought that up was like, you know, are you trying to, you know, teach your kids about tradition, culture? How's your kids in nurse school? Are they going, you know? But the thing was, you know, getting back to like I said, when I had long hair and I guess, and I went through those ugly duckling stages.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not that I'm beautiful now, but I mean, you know, just because I had the long hair and back in the 80s, that was the thing, long hair and ripped up jeans and I guess the rock and roll look.
Right.
So I fit in for one time in my life. I fit into a culture, a life.
Yeah.
You know, and back that time, being Native American was cool and, you know.
Now, did you braid your hair? Or did you have ponytails or what did you do?
I just let it
go
free, and that's what people loved. And then, like I said, after I met this girl, her mom was into the dancing and the powwows, so I started going to powwows. And then that's when they started saying, you can't let your hair grow out like that. You're supposed to braid it, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I had elders. Like I said, I was being taught to sing, to dance. And, of course, my flute carried over. And
so now you were getting into the traditional ways of the Native American world. I mean, You think the universe was just kind of pushing you toward that? I mean, the greater power was getting you to a place of, now that we know that you're kind of a performer, now we need to push you there so you can entertain or inspire the Native American culture or the Native American people of your tribe and others?
The thing is, like I said, we're talking about the abuse, yes, the bullying.
Yes.
So I was very shy.
Yeah.
So in getting into this Desenal, Daughters and Sons of the American Warriors, yes, the lady has passed on. Her name is Marcy Stone. She would introduce me, and I'd come out and play the flute, and I was always practicing. But she was like, I can't keep introducing you. You got to come up and tell your own story and tell about the flute. And I'm like, you know, and I was like, give me some time. I will try to get up the courage. So one day, she just like, all right, Michael Owen, come up here. And I was like, you know, and so I was just put on the spot. It was kind of like sink or swim. And so I was put on the spot, and I had to really come up with something. And I know the first time of anybody doing anything that they're not used to doing, of course, it's not going to sound bad, but it wasn't all together. Mm-hmm. So I had to go home and do some studying and, you know, try to do some, you know, what they do in school, you know, when they present presentations in front of people.
Right.
I had to learn to overcome that fear of being
in front
of people.
That's the scariest thing in the world, to get past that.
And now it's like, that's all I do is I love getting in front of people.
You do. I mean, you jump like, hey, you want to do a show? Yep. When can we do it? And you're just right there. I mean, you're like, you're fearless. So when, you know, you had Russell, I think he was so afraid of getting out there. Russell Sun Eagle, the OKI podcast guy, your next interview. I mean, he shared with you how he was afraid. I mean, did you feel for him? I mean, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, like I said, I was just like, don't worry about a thing. You got this. You know, you do it already. We're just doing it for a TV show rather than a talk show. So you got this. You can do it. Trust me. I know talent. When I see, you know, I tell people, like, they trust my word. You know, they see me, that I've been around. And if I say, you got something, they're like, oh, okay. Now, if I don't say anything, that's when you got to worry.
Well, I remember when you told me, say, hey, Norris, I've got to do a podcast. And, of course, you got all decked out, you know, and you showed up, and then we realized it was just a bunch of guys and girls with their microphones such as this, and there weren't any TV cameras. You didn't know what. And I was going, man, you know, and, of course, you were able to play some songs and sing some stuff.
Well, like I said, I was like, what is this? They called me like, we want to do a podcast with you. And I'm like, okay, I'm honored. And we're going to do it about Indian Elvis. And I said, great. So we get there and I'm all dressed up in my outfit, you know, my guitar ready in hand. And they're like, oh, we're just doing a podcast. You don't have to dress up. And I was like, oh, okay. I've always never had the business card, never had the internet, the Indian Elvis at the webpage.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was just kind of do it word of mouth, and now the technology is really coming up, so doing these podcasts, now doing a TV show, and basically with the TV show and everything else, all I want to do in life, like I said, I'm a lover of life, I'm a lover of performing for people and making people feel comfortable, making people feel whole, no matter what nationality they are, and I'm always trying to encourage people to learn about their culture, their nationality.
Yes.
Because I think when people know about themselves and about where they come from, they can feel more whole. One thing I want to say, too, I love this new culture, these young people. They're more accepting of Native American culture than people my age and older.
Yeah, that's true.
And they're always like, oh, you Indians complain too much, you know, how you were treated poorly. And I'm like, do you not even understand history, you know? With the reservation systems, I mean, like, Hitler derived his concentration camps on the reservation system that was employed by the United States government. So I want to talk about stuff like that and get issues like that and get...
Right, yeah, absolutely.
But we're always told to shut up. And so I also am a KJ, which is a karaoke jockey, on Friday and Saturday night at this place called Lot 6 in Tulsa, Oklahoma. just with the name Indian Elvis, I'm like, all right, tonight, you know, I'll go through this whole thing, and I'm Michael Omenick, hey, Indian Elvis, you know.
Yeah.
People always come in and visit and want to sing with me. And so the other night was after we got done with everything. We had two guys come in. These guys are a mountain of men, these two native guys. And this other native guy that I've known that does silversmith, and he was like, I want to check you out. And I said, come on in. At the end of the night, I start playing this 49 song. And I was like, oh, I shouldn't do that at a bar, you know. And so they start singing it. So I just turn everything off, and we finished a whole night with a 49 song called Indian Girls. And after we'd done that, of course, we had like five of us natives, and the other half was non-natives. And they were just so appreciative of that and hearing that live instead of hearing that on the radio or hearing that, you know, from a CD or video. Like I said, that's why I love this new culture of kids. They just like, wow, you're native and you should be so proud, compared to when I was a little kid, like, you're so dirty and you need to, you know. So that's one thing that I think I want to do in life, is just really carry on the love of the culture to other cultures. Because I love other cultures too. Sure. I love the music and the dance from every other. I incorporate from the martial arts, I incorporate the jumps and the kicks and my fancy dance and my, you know, my performance and my dancing, my competition. I even take a little move from the 90s, the hip hop. I knew that Vanilla Ice dance, you know.
But now you had the last interviewer was Dan Warrior. He's kind of a multi-talented guy. Drummer, actor. Now, both of you guys worked on that film, Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah, I never saw him on there. I was an extra. I was a driver. I was a golfer and a football player. And, of course, you know, there's a couple scenes you'll see me driving the cars, a couple scenes you'll, you know. But, yeah, he was a caterer. And, of course, he had this, he was really tall, and that's what really makes him stand out.
I think he played the beginning of the film is where the Osage are giving up their land in Missouri and Kansas. And it's showing him standing out there, realizing he's losing all of this. The tribe is having, they're forced to move, you know, at gunpoint, more or less. And there he was with Martin Scorsese and this film crew behind him. And Martin said, think of the worst thing that ever happened to you and look out in the sky there. And he did that. I mean, you know, here we are. You've been able to transform your life. You've been able to look within to find the strength. I mean, is there anything that you want to inspire someone and share with someone with some words?
We're all the same. If you want to lift up yourself, go lift up someone else.
Michael, this has been great. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That is Michael Lohman, a.k.a. Indian Elvis, in conversation with his producer, Nora Streetman, recorded at the StoryCorps mobile booth last month here in our community. Studio Tulsa is hosted by Rich Fisher. I'm sitting in for him today. I'm Scott Gregory. I also edit and produce the show. You can find previous episodes of Studio Tulsa online and on demand, absolutely free, at studiotulsa.org. Thanks very much for tuning in. And by way of closing, I'd like to say something now that I've never said on the radio before. Elvis has left the building.